Welcome back to the Relational Grace Podcast, where we feature the teachings of Pastor Nick Harris, who taught us that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. I'm Jamie Russell, Pastor Harris's son. In this episode, we're going to dig into the second message of the Breaking the Chains series we recently started, featuring Paul's letter to Galatia. As a quick refresher, Paul initially wrote this letter to address the mammoth problem that had originated in the churches. Paul and Barnabas had established churches in Galatia on their first missionary journey. However, the believers had begun to accept the idea that grace was not sufficient for salvation. This idea was birthed as a result of a vicious virus known as legalism. And this virus had infected their entire body. You see, a delegation from Jerusalem known as the Pharisee Christians had arrived in the region of Galatia. The men who composed the delegation had come to know Christ as their Savior. But unlike Paul and Barnabas, they had not been able to sever their lifelong attachment to the law, nor did they want to. For several years, the men of the delegation had deeply distrusted Paul and his message. It was their belief that in his teachings, Paul undermined the Torah and the temple whenever he went. As far as these men were concerned, Torah and temple still stood at the center of Christianity because they saw Christianity as an extension of Judaism. In addition, they believed that Paul had not only deserted Torah and temple, but that he had also deserted Jewish law, including the Ten Commandments. The difference between Paul and the Jerusalem delegation was this. Paul preached Jesus plus nothing, while the delegation of Pharisee Christians preached Jesus plus law, or as Dad would point out, Jesus plus religion. Now before we get started, I specifically wanted to point out that this episode will mark the first time we've republished a message. Well, in a way. Back in episode 10, we featured a teaching with the same title as this one. However, comparing the two, they are from different years and the delivery varies here and there, but the base message is the same. But I think it was important that we kept the series fully intact and included all the episodes. So let's get on with this message. How about we all just say so long to religion and say hello to relationship and jump into the second teaching of the Breaking the Chains series titled Religion versus Relationship.
Well, our text for this morning comes from the book of Galatians, chapter 1, verses 6 through 14. And it's a shocking text. I mean, it really does shock me when I read it. I don't expect it. It surprises me. The words that Paul has written here are highly unusual for him. You see, when we read his other epistles, he always begins with words of encouragement. He's lifting believers. He's in strengthening them. He always attempts to edify and motivate his readers, not beat them black and blue. But the epistle to the Galatians is different. The apostle's opening remarks are scathing. Now listen, if you will, to Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. He says, I marvel that you are turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another, but there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Jesus Christ. Notice how he starts. It's shocking. He said, I marvel. This is the New King James rendering. I marvel. But the Greek word Paul actually uses here means I'm shocked. It means I'm stunned. And why is the great epistle shocked or stunned? It's because he's only been away from them, only away from Galatia for a couple of months at the most. And in that brief span of time, they had removed themselves from virtually everything he had taught them. Now, I emphasize that word removed because its root meaning in Greek is very pointed. Now, the word here is this, metatisteste, and in the Greek world of the first century, this was a military term. A military term. It was the word that was used when a soldier went AWOL. It was the word used when a soldier left his post of duty without permission. So by the use of this word, metateste, the apostle is saying this to the Galatians. I am shocked that those of you who have enlisted in the army of Jesus Christ have now gone AWOL. Now, I'm sure that these Galatian believers, when they read this, they too were shocked and stunned. They must have said to themselves, we haven't gone AWOL. We still gather on the Lord's Day. We still praise and worship God. We still study the Word. We still pray. We haven't gone AWOL. But as Paul saw things, they had. In his view, they had fled from the doctrine of grace into the arms of legalism. And to do this, as the apostle saw it, was to desert the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, if I could describe what these new believers had done, I would say it this way. They had left the encampment of grace to follow another gospel, which is really not another gospel. Now, I know that these words are very confusing to you. I mean, now think about this. They left the gospel for another gospel, which is really not a gospel. That makes no sense. So how can these people follow another gospel, which is not another gospel? See, logically, that doesn't make any sense. Well, the answer, once again, lies in the original Greek. You see, in the Greek language, there are two words, both of which are translated as another. And this is important to understanding the book of Galatians. Now, one of those two Greek words is a word all of you will quickly recognize. It is the noun heteros. Heteros. Our word heterosexual comes from this word. Now, the word heteros means another of a different kind. Or another of, really, more correctly, another of an opposite kind. For example, a man and a woman are heteros. They are opposites. They are another of an opposite kind. Now, the second Greek noun that is translated as another is the word allos. It means another, but of the same kind. For example, two men are allos. Now, let me try to explain the difference in these two words this way. If you were to hand me an apple and an orange, both items would have one thing in common. Both the apple and the orange would be classified as being a fruit. But they are two different kinds of fruit. So to the Greeks, the apple and the orange are heteros. They are heteros. But if you were to hand me two apples, they would be allos. They are fruit of the same kind. They are both apple. Now, when Paul writes to the Galatians, telling them that they had turned to another gospel, the word he uses is the noun heteros. This, he says, that is being preached to you by these people who have come to you, they're not preaching you an allos gospel. They are preaching you a heteros gospel. It is the very opposite of what I have preached to you. It is another of the opposite kind. In other words, the gospel to which they had turned was a gospel, all right, but this gospel was totally different from the gospel they had received from him. It was like apples and oranges. Both are fruit, but they are fruit of a different kind. Now, let's see if I can clarify this even further. When those Pharisee Christians, of which I spoke last week, came to Galatia, they had told these Galatians that the gospel message they were bringing was merely allos when compared to the gospel the Apostle Paul had shared with him. They said, it's the same gospel. It's just a gospel of another kind. We might say that they told the Galatians this. Their message was just another form of the same gospel that Paul had preached to them. But Paul, when he writes in great, well, he's not writing, he's dictating, but he dictates in a very loud voice. He says to them, no, 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 that gospel that they've delivered to you is not allos at all, it is heteros. Yes, these Pharisee Christians had a gospel they preached, but it was not the gospel he preached. It wasn't even remotely the same. It was heteros. It was another gospel. Then the apostle proceeded to tell the Galatians who these Pharisee Christians really were. He identified them. Here's what he said. There be some that trouble you. What's he saying? He says, let me tell you about the Pharisee Christians. They're troublemakers. They stirred up conflict in the churches. And beloved, I can promise you, anywhere legalism raises its ugly head, trouble's going to lie just beyond the bend. What happens? What happens with legalism? Unity will be broken. Because everyone will have their own standards of what they consider acceptable behavior. Some is going to settle on how much lipstick you can wear. Some is going to focus on how long your hair is going to be. Some are going to focus on how expensive your shoes are. Pretty soon, you've got all kinds of stuff running amok in the church. And the experience of the Galatian believers proves this. You see, they destroyed, by legalism, they destroyed the unity in the church. I mean, they had that church where they were fighting with one another, and that was only one of the dangers they brought. There was another danger that was even greater than disunity. You see, the apostle, who was dictating words inspired by the Holy Spirit himself, he says, this heteros gospel of theirs is not only different, it's a perversion. It's a perversion of the gospel. In fact, what he's saying here, it's damnable in its content. Now, the apostle writes in Galatians 1:7b, that these troublemakers had perverted the gospel message. Now, this verb translated as perverted in Galatians 1:7b is an interesting word in Greek. Fascinating word. It is the noun metastressai. Metastressai. What it means? It means to take an alien solution and mix it with a pure base. You've got your pure base. You mix it with this alien solution. And in so doing, what do? You change the entire chemical content of the base. In other words, what the Pharisee Christians were mixing with the pure gospel base had transformed the base into something totally different. They had changed it into something heteros. So what Paul was saying in Galatians 1:7 was this. These Pharisee Christians had taken the pure gospel message, the message of Jesus plus nothing, and they had added to it this alien solution of the works of the law. And thus the base was altered to become Jesus plus the law, or Jesus plus rules, or Jesus plus religion. So I must caution you. When anything is added to the pure gospel of Jesus plus nothing, it will pervert the message and create another gospel. It becomes a gospel of another kind, and it becomes something called religion. That is the product of mixing legalism with the pure base, is you get religion. Now, this is how all religion is born. It is a perversion of the true gospel message. Now, as we all know, Paul was acutely aware of the dangers of religion. So in Galatians chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, he issued this stern warning to the Galatians. He said, but even if we, I'm talking about Barnabas and myself, even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. Now here Paul provides a list of three potential messengers that might preach this heteros gospel. First there is we. Yeah. He sets himself up. He said, listen, we can get our theology messed up just like any other human being can. But you see, the Galatians all knew the message of Paul and Barnabas. It was Jesus plus nothing, and they never would back off of it. But then, Paul says, there might be angels, really demonic messengers, who might come to you. And they will pervert your gospel. And then finally, he says, there are other men, like these Pharisee Christians. So how do we know who to believe? We've got apostles, and then we've got angels, and then we've got these supersonic Christians from Jerusalem. Who do we believe? Well, in Paul's view, anyone who comes to you preaching any message other than Jesus plus nothing is a false teacher. And this is what Paul tells the church to do with a false teacher. He says, let him be accursed. Well, the Greek word used here is the word anathema. It means to shun, to avoid, to stay away from. Anytime you hear a teacher lapsing into legalism, get away, he says. stay away from these false messengers. If you don't, they will infect you. Now, beloved, for the Apostle Paul to dictate such harsh words indicates the severity of the dangers of this other gospel and its messengers. See, it's dangerous business. So, having made this point, Paul then confronted the accusers. He confronted them about what they had said about him. Perhaps you remember from last week what they had told the Galatians. They had said of the apostle, "Now you know Paul. Bless his little heart. He is such a well-meaning fellow. But he doesn't really know what the true gospel is." See, we're here with the true gospel. We're here to tell you what the true gospel message is. He really doesn't know what it is because he never knew Jesus personally like we did. So he has no idea of what Jesus really taught. What you need to do is check out James, his brother, because his brother knew him better than anybody. We need to check it. Don't pay any attention to this guy, Paul. He said he learned his gospel, God only knows, somewhere out in Arabia. He claims that Christ appeared to him and taught him personally. And now, according to him, he'd grown so anxious to be accepted as an apostle that he invented this doctrine of grace. He came out with this grace thing so that people would think there was no price to be paid for the gospel. It was all easy. He invented the message to make everybody like him, to make him popular. He is nothing more than a man pleaser. Well, let me tell you something about Paul. Paul didn't take anything laying down. This guy was capable of firing back, and he did fire back. He answered the second accusation first in Galatians 1:10. Listen to this. Do I now persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I still please men... Now, see, you've got to watch the text, beloved. You see this word? Still? If I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. Now, the words Paul uses here are startling. He says, "For if I still please men." Well, here the apostle confesses that at one time in his life, he was indeed a man pleaser, as accused. He had done exactly what his critics had said. He was guilty as charged. Now, I'm sure he did not think he was pleasing men at the time he was doing it. He thought he was pleasing God. They say, "Pastor, when was this?" Well, it was back when Paul himself was a Pharisee. Like these Pharisee Christians who came preaching this gospel. That was when he was a man pleaser. It was when he was known as Saul of Tarsus. And according to the Acts account at this time in his life, his religious zeal was legendary. But you see, his zeal was fueled by his own ambitions, his selfish ambitions. And this emotion drove young Saul of Tarsus like a cattle prod. He believed the lie that he could be maximally effective for God. But to do this, he had to have a place of power in the Jerusalem structure. And he couldn't have the power he required until he had proven his loyalty and commitment to the religious leadership. He felt that he had to please them. And the growth of the Christian movement gave him the very opportunity he needed. Here's what he reasoned. He said, "If I can only destroy this movement, they will see, the powers that be, the Sanhedrin and all of these other people will see my value. I will do whatever it takes," he said, "to be applauded and lauded by the temple authorities." So he lied, he maimed, he tortured, and he even killed innocent people to please men. Not God. Now notice Galatians 1:13. It reads as follows. "For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it." Now, here he admits what his agenda had been in those days. He admits that he was actually driven to do what he did because of his zeal to please men. You see, Saul of Tarsus hated this new movement and its belief in the physical, bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. And he had done this because he had approached it with his head alone and not with his heart. Everything was up here with him at that point in his life. His head told him that dead men are dead, and Jesus of Nazareth was as dead as a doornail. Dead men don't live. Therefore, this Nazarene could not be the deliverer of the people of Israel, because he's dead. In other words, you can't have a dead Messiah. What did Saul of Tarsus think a Messiah was? A military deliverer. He believed that this was the man who was going to raise armies and overthrow the great Romans. So how can you do that if you're dead? Oh, sure, some of the followers of Jesus said that he had risen from the dead, but they were ignorant Galileans. Everybody knew that. They were deluded by their grief. Either that, or they were just plain liars who had fabricated this resurrection story to fleece people. And Saul believed the latter. He believed Jesus of Nazareth was dead. If you knew where his bones were, you could go dig him up. That was what his head told him. So he set out to eliminate these liars. In Philippians chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, Paul himself confesses what had been behind his rabid persecution of the church. Listen to his words. He says of himself, "Circumcised on the eighth day of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, concerning the law a Pharisee, concerning zeal, persecuting the church, concerning the righteousness which is in the law, blameless." You see, as a result of these things, he advanced quickly in the religious hierarchy. He got what he wanted. He did those things to please men, and eventually he had exactly what he wanted, the respect and the honor accorded him by the Jerusalem authorities. And the religious hierarchy, believe me, was indeed religious. And what this hierarchy did in the name of God is one of the reasons I despise religion. Beloved, I detest it with every bone in my body. Religion has caused more people to go to hell than all the sins ever committed rolled into one. Over the centuries, in the name of religion, people have tortured other people, fought senseless wars, and starved other people to death. Just look at India today. Here is a nation filled with ignorance, disease, famine, dissension, and hatred. Thousands starve to death on the street every day, while an abundant supply of food, in the form of cows, walk past them on every street corner. But the starving masses will not kill or eat this food because their Hindu religion tells them that the cow is sacred. After all, it may be their reincarnated grandmother or grandfather. What an accursed religion. Or consider what we go through at the airport every time we want to fly somewhere. We all have to take off our shoes. Doesn't that irritate the living daylights out of you? We have to take off our shoes and submit to exhaustive searches because some Muslim fanatic wants to kill us for religious purposes. In fact, in Israel, there are Muslims who are engaged daily in a holy war against the Jews to protect one of the so-called sacred sites of Islam. At least that's what they say. And that's why I despise religion. It's damnable. It always has been, and it still is. Now, why is that the case? Well, first of all, religion blinds people. And once it has blinded them, then it destroys them. We can see this blinding power of religion all around us. Now, over the years, I've preached in churches across the length and breadth, from New England all the way to California. And you know, the hardest people for me to reach are the religious people. These people have become so proud of their empty rituals, so enamored by their godly deeds, so blinded by church dogma, that they wouldn't know Jesus if he walked in and stepped into the pulpit and introduced himself. Let me tell you the problem religious people face. They shut themselves off from salvation. Instead of elevating the cross, they elevate their own good works, their own good deeds. But in God's eyes, everything they do is no more than filthy rags. You see, if personal good deeds or religious devotion are works of religiousness could save anyone, then Jesus would not have had to die upon the cross. His death would have been foolish. And that's why I say this. Religion renders the cross of Jesus Christ ineffective. And that's a dangerous thing. Now, this over-religious Pharisee, Saul of Tarsus, had to learn this lesson the hard way. He was determined to show his devotion to God and to Judaism by eliminating these Christians who threatened the very fabric of his cherished religion. In his mind, he believed that the church would soon be eliminated and his religion would once again be secure. But as you can see, something had to give. Either Saul had to give or the church had to give. The ant had now met the rubber tree plant and the ram had now met the dam. Either the church was going to fall or Saul of Tarsus was going to fall. Well, you and I both know what Jesus said. He had said to Peter that the gates of hell itself will not prevail against his church. That was an established fact. So that only leaves, if the church is not going to fall, that only leaves Saul of Tarsus to fall. And that's exactly what happened. In a flash of lightning, in a light from above, he was stricken, knocked from his horse, laying flat in the dust of the Damascus Road. And before he could get up, he found himself face to face with the very one he had been persecuting, Jesus of Nazareth. And when Jesus actually spoke to Saul in an audible voice, Saul suddenly knew he'd been all wrong. He had done everything he did because he believed that Jesus was dead. And now this Jesus he believed was dead was speaking to him, saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" He said, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, "I'm Jesus." Well, gee whiz, he's not dead. Suddenly all of his religion has gone up in smoke. Every religious idea he had ever had was gone. And the Christ whom he had persecuted for so long suddenly came and entered into him and came to live within him. Saul of Tarsus had fallen to the ground as the defender of religion, but he had risen as Saul, an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ. Somebody say, "Wow." This man would later say, "Christ is now my master. I serve none but him. He is the source of my identity. It is him in me that matters and nothing else." You see, beloved, that's the key. That's what sets Christianity apart from religion. It is Christ living in us. There is no room for religion. It's all relationship. At that point, when that Christ came to live in him, he recognized who Christ was. And it changed everything about him. And suddenly this man became a bondservant, a slave to Jesus Christ. Now, beloved, this is an important distinction. The job of a servant is to please his master, not to please himself. The master dictates, not others. And now, in the case of Saul, whether other people liked him or not didn't matter to him anymore. He was no longer a man pleaser. The only person he wanted to please was his Lord. The one who had now taken residence in him. The one that he loved and the one who loved him. Popularity and public acclaim never matters to a committed servant, right? Now, beloved, let me digress for just a moment. There's nothing wrong with popularity. My God, I want to be popular. I don't want you guys hating me. There's nothing wrong with being liked and admired. But popularity can become a trap if we begin to draw our sense of who we are from what others think about us. The truth is this. The moment we begin to draw our identity from the opinions of others, others become our master. Right? Not Paul. He had only one master. The risen Christ. And Saul was now his bondservant. So long to religion. Hello, relationship. You see, that's what the Pharisee Christians could not understand. They were saved. Now understand, Pastor, they were going to heaven when they died. It's just that their theology was confusing because they lacked the relationship. They were trying to please God by what they did. They didn't understand you can only please God by what Christ did. Now, am I suggesting that all of my people here at the chapel go out and live like the devil? No. Because if Christ lives in you, you want to do everything you can do to please Him. You see, I love my wife. I really do. I want to please her. I travel all around the world. Somebody said to me last night, I don't think I've never known anybody that's traveled as far and wide as you have. Well, Chris used to have kids at home and she wouldn't fly with me. So I went to all of these wonderful places by myself. Now, she was never going to know what I did. But you know what, baby, and you know it's true. I was never, ever unfaithful to you. Why? Not because I had to be faithful to you, but because the love in my heart for you kept me faithful. I did not want to displease you. I love you. Relationship holds us together, not some piece of paper we signed 33 years ago. It's that relationship between you and me. Now, you know, a lot of people have a view of God that if you fail, that God's going to get you. He's going to stuff you in the oven and bake you. Now, do I believe in hell? Oh, yes, I do. But do I believe that that's the destination for Christians? No, I don't. Now, you see, if I would have ever messed up, Chris wouldn't stuff me in the oven and bake me. She would have just shot me. Thank God, He is a God of grace. He understands our weaknesses. He doesn't approve of them. Why? Because somehow it diminishes Him? No, because He loves you and He wants the best for you. That's how it is. We're faithful. More out of relationship. You see, when I was trying to be a legalistic Christian, I couldn't be, and I was frustrated all the time, and I constantly felt like I was dying. And every Sunday night, my dad would preach an evangelistic sermon, and I would rush to the altar and get saved for the umpteen thousandth time. But when Christ came to live in me, there was no more need for that, ever. I knew I was loved with an everlasting love, and because I was His servant, I wanted to do that which was pleasing in His sight. Not because I had to. Not because I had to. That was my old religion. My relationship says, I do this because I want to. And see, when I see you not doing the things that I think you should do, I don't come to you and tell you about it, because that's between you and God, not between you and me. Your relationship deals with that. I have to deal with my own relationship, and each one of us has to deal with our relationship with Him. That is my teaching for this morning.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Don't forget to connect with Ariel Ministries on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe to our email list at arielministries.com. That's Ariel spelled A-R-I-E-L. We look forward to keeping you updated on upcoming episodes and projects. If you would like to support the missional efforts of Ariel Ministries in Tharaka, Kenya with Each One Feed One, we'd like to remind you that 10% of all donations to Ariel Ministries will support this missional effort. Visit arielministries.com/give for online donations and other methods of giving. To learn more about the Tharaka mission, you can visit arielministries.com/missions. You can also listen to episode 26 for a deeper dive into how our relationship with Each One Feed One and the McCarter family started over 35 years ago, where we are today, and where we're headed in the future.